over at Black Rifle Coffee. I've had two cups of coffee today, and I love their coffee. I cannot go without it. And you can grab a can of that Black Rifle Coffee ready-to-drink coffee, because they're taking the proceeds of that, and they're putting it towards veterans through the Boot campaign, their ongoing fundraising for helping veterans for the Boot campaign. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the Boot campaign, it's one of the most well-renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country. And individualized programs are designed to show gratitude to our nation's veterans. They help vets deal with post-traumatic stress, all these invisible wounds of war, you know, traumatic brain injuries, chronic pain, self-medication, insomnia. And Black Rifle Coffee, being a veteran-owned coffee company that employs both retired and active duty service members, they serve premium coffee to people who love America. They have the best coffee that you can get. And you can join the coffee club, where you can get the ready-to-drink coffees. It's 12 packs that all goes towards that Boot campaign. You can get coffee club, choose your roast or roasts, frequency of shipment, and then have it delivered right to your doorstep, so you never run out of coffee ever. And every can contributes to making that donation possible, that ready to drink coffee. They also have great merch if you're not a big caffeine head like I am: mug designs, t-shirts, hoodies, hats, and more. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. It's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
There is no possible takeaway from last night other than this. Americans fiercely oppose MAGA extremism, fiercely oppose total abortion bans, and want bipartisan leaders who can put America's needs first. After last night's results, I have a message to my Republican colleagues. When the MAGA agenda can't win in deep red Kentucky or in Ohio or help you in Virginia, it's time to recognize MAGA extremism is the wrong answer, not just for the country, but even for the GOP.
Okay, let's have a conversation about this, shall we? Shall we? I think it's time, because this is one of the things that I did last night, was look at a lot of the election results that came in to try to make sense of it. I did send out something to all of the newsletter. Literally forgot the word newsletter. What is it? It's the weather. The newsletter subscribers over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. I sent out something to you all last night, so you got that, because I wanted to make sure that you had that on your plate before we, you know, before you got up this morning, and or like most of you, I think, read it in bed before you get out. And before you just started hearing the narrative that build from last night. And I want to break down what happened in Virginia and how actually the spin that you're hearing is not accurate. What I'm saying sounds counterintuitive, but I promise you it's going to make sense. So we're going to get started with that today. We got a bunch of other stuff to get into as well, including the censure of Rashida Tlaib, etc. Welcome to the program. It's Wednesday. How in the world is it Wednesday? What is happening? It feels like a Tuesday, right? I don't know. Dana Loesch with you. Kane's like, feels like a Wednesday to me. Yeah. You can listen to the radio program across the country. You can listen, stream it as well, and watch the simulcast on YouTube. We're always good discussion up on YouTube, Facebook, and channel 347 Direct TV. So, like I said, we got a lot to hit today. So let me start. I want to break down this election stuff. And I wrote about this, again, email newsletter. For those of you who get the newsletters, you got some of a breakdown of this. And I was talking to some of my friends last night and walking some people off the cliff, because here's the reality of the situation. Virginia's an odd, and Kentucky too. In Kentucky, specifically, what Chuck Schumer is talking about is Andy Beshear, and he was going up against the Republican AG. He's the Republican AG, Daniel Cameron. And Cameron spent a lot. There was one report that said Cameron had spent 2-1 over Beshear. Beshear had spent a lot of money. I don't think as much as he did previous election, but he's the incumbent. Here's what you need to know about Kentucky and Missouri and states like this, because everyone thinks, oh, you're obviously going to be a red state. I need you to understand something. Just because you think, for some of the people who are not in flyover country out there, for our friends on the coast, because we got a lot of affiliates in California and up and down the Eastern Seaboard, not every person in a state that is perceived to be red and maybe even have the stereotype of the coastal folks of being rednecky is actually red. For instance, I grew up in southern Missouri. And my entire family in southern Missouri, they're Democrats. They have been Democrats as the day is long. Although I think my grandfather was like a Kennedy Democrat, but I still had questions. I'm like, how do you have the ancestry that you have and you vote Democrat? But okay, moving on. But in the beginning, of course, some of them have gone straight to socialism. In the beginning, it was because it was the union. You know, if they were auto workers, if they were in mining, I mean, you're in the union, you're a union Democrat. And I wrote in my book, Flyover Nation, this was what, in 2016, I wrote how these same voters, one of the reasons that these voters, Democrats, lost them in the 2016 election is because they had so reliably voted Democrat for so long. They showed up and they voted for Democrats. They showed up, you know, they supported Dukakis even. They showed up and they supported Clinton. They showed up and they supported Al Gore. They showed up for every single Democrat candidate. They showed up for Barack Obama. Hillary Clinton was never popular. And I need to put this out here so you can understand the perception of what happened last night. Hillary Clinton has never been popular. When I was in junior high, in my Democrat family, all of the women in my Democrat family hated Hillary Clinton. Hated her. Hated her. She has, and women out there listening, you know, there are some women out there that you would not have as a girlfriend. And you know what I'm talking about. There are some women out there where you're like, you're a tart. Or I can't trust you. If another woman makes the determination that she can't trust you at tea time, meaning with gossip, you ain't going to be one of her lady friends. It's not going to happen. That is how all women feel about Hillary Clinton. That is the perception. They thought that she was manipulative and conniving. And then when she came out and said, well, I don't have time to stay at home and have teas and bake cookies. Oh, my gosh. She shredded any vestige of hope that maybe perhaps had remained at building or repairing that relationship between her and Democrats' women base. It is weird for a woman in the Democrat Party to lose women, but yet she did it in a fantastical fashion. So they couldn't show up and vote for her. And then when she was insulting everybody and, you know, saying that basically if you're not, you know, you're just a deplorable this or whatever, I mean, that didn't go over well. And then all of these same people that I'm talking about suffered the indignity of having their characters impugned as being sexist or racist, because somehow if you didn't vote for the old white woman in 2016, you were a racist. I know Democrats have nothing else to fall back on. They will use it and try to shove that round shape into the square hole as hard as possible, the toddler shape sorter, but that wasn't working. But they actually were trying to argue that everybody out there in these states, and a lot of them were in Kentucky, that they were sexist because they didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. They didn't vote for her because they think she's a bitch, not because of anything else. She has always been viewed as that way. Always. And so that made them mad. You impugned their character. They showed up and they were the team players, and then you turned around and burned them. So hell, a lot of them ended up flipping sides just on out of spite on that alone. This is why I'm saying you can't look at states like Kentucky and even areas of southern Missouri or even parts, you know, Virginia, etc., and just assume that people, it's red. They seem like more rural folk. No. It's actually incredibly complex and very difficult to predict. These people are way more complex and more difficult to predict than people on the East Coast and the West Coast. I will guarantee you that. So everyone looks at somebody like Andy Beshear and they're like, oh my gosh, you know, he's a Democrat in a red state like Kentucky. He's a moderate in a red state like Kentucky. Same reason that Jay Nixon, who is a moderate, was a Democrat governor in the state of Missouri, a state that Trump took by double digits. If you play your game right and you're a Joe Manchin Democrat, you can have a lifespan politically in these states. And that's what Beshear does. I also think that he had greater name recognition over Daniel Cameron, the Republican AG. And I also think that the RNC is a steaming hot pile of disintegrating feces because they have no idea how to manage either expectations or elections. Daniel Cameron needed a boost in this big time. Whenever you have someone who I think is a star in the party, I hate saying that word, but for the lack of a better way to put it, we're saying it. He is an up and coming superstar in the Republican Party. And this is just a minor setback. But in order to get your foot in the door of the big office, yeah, he's AG now, but who's going for governor? That's a whole new ballgame. You need the party to show up. You need the RNC to show up. You need Ronna Romney McDaniel to show up. I need the RNC to stop obsessing less over trials in New York and that and realize that right now you got to get seats. Not to say that trials elsewhere, all this other stuff that Trump's doing, not to say that yes, we all know. I think New York is a witch hunt. We all know this. But we got to win elections, guys. Do you want to have a country in 24? That's where we're at. I've never said that about any election in my life. You can go back and listen to my very first show, October 28th in 2008. And from that time on, I have never, ever said that. This is it. I am not kidding. We don't have time to jack around with everything else. Where the hell is the RNC? Now, if Republicans wanted to be ignorant, and see, I'm one of the ignorant ones, I would have said, racist Democrat voters rejected, Reagan-esque low-tax black candidate in Kentucky. I didn't say that, though. I'm just saying I would have if I were playing that role of an ignorant Republican today. Now, in Virginia, and we'll come back to some of this. In Virginia, winning the trifecta of both the House of Delegates and the state Senate and having the governor's mansion was always going to be a very, very... going to be a very tall order. And I wanted to kind of also put this in perspective. There's a couple of things that they're dealing with in Virginia. First off, redistricting. Republicans got pounded because of the redistricting in Virginia. You know who was involved in that? I was reading a big thing about this last night. Eric Holder's been leading the initiative on behalf of Democrats going state to... Yeah, Kane just raised this. Now you see, why do you think Barack Obama was playing around in Virginia? In the last month. Why do you think he was there playing around Virginia? That's why. Republicans got pounded the last redistricting. It's been a big deal. But here's the thing. I was comparing, let me pull this up. I was comparing the elections. Virginia's a blue state, guys. It's a blue state. But they went for, goodness, I mean, you had Hillary Clinton in 2016. They went for Hillary Clinton in 2016. They went for Biden in 2020. And these were pretty sized. I mean, Biden won plus 10. You know, Hillary Clinton won almost plus six. Barack Obama wiped the floor with Mitt Romney and John McCain. The last time that they had voted for a Republican was in 2004 in terms of president. Now, when you go back and you look at some of the governor's races, too, it's a blue state. The 2021 performance of the Republican Party, they overperformed in the state. And I think some of that was fueled by coronavirus. People were livid. They were mad about the schools. They were mad about not having services for which they had paid taxes, everything being shut down. That fueled a lot of it. They overperformed in 2021. So considering the redistricting even, this is not the mandate on Glenn Youngkin that Democrats won. So coming up, one of the things I'm going to explain to you is how they're trying to make Glenn Youngkin. This is why Democrats have built him up as the avatar for CRT in schools, DEI, the school board fight. They want to use this as a mandate against all of that Republicans with just this. But it's really not, because in Northern Virginia, Republicans were even outperforming Trump in previous elections. They overperformed in 2021. And they're still increasing GOP voter registration. This is not the mandate. that Democrats are trying to make it out to be. They desperately want it to be so. We're going to talk more about this. We're also going to touch on the big thing, though. The big loss last night was Ohio. Ohio is now one of the most permissive states, if not the most permissive state in the union regarding abortion. Not just abortion, but age and consent for minor gender surgeries. We're going to discuss all of that and more, so you don't want to miss. We're going to get you set up so you don't believe the garbage that you see on cable news. It's Kel-Tec, great Florida company. They make some very awesome freedom sticks. We'll just refer to it like that. Yeah, freedom sticks. Let's go with that. The Kel-Tec Sub 2K, this is for all the people who think less is more, right? For two decades now, the folds in half, Kel-Tec Sub 2K carbine's been filling that pistol caliber carbine gap. So you got a lot of options for several popular magazines. You got Glock, you got Smith & Wesson, you got Sig Sauer, meaning that you're taking along a lot less and it's much easier to pack up and roll. And so right now, all the way until March of next year, Kel-Tec is offering a $100 rebate program on any newly purchased Sub 2K from a licensed dealer. So you get you a Sub 2K and you get $100, which is nice because, you know, I mean, inflation has it where everybody's broke. So yeah, so they have their awesome rebate program. And this Sub 2K, if you are unfamiliar with it, this is just, it's too cool. Like I said, folds in half. I have one. I love my Sub 2K. You can go to KelTecWeapons.com, learn everything about it. As well. And like I said, all the way until March of 2024, they got that $100 rebate program. And then you just submit it. It's super easy to do. And the Sub 2K, you got the ballistic advantage, you got distance accuracy, 16-inch barrel, and it's easily disassembled for cleaning, inspection, you know, without tools, intuitive sights, adjustable stock, super easy to field strip. You got it. It really is, like I said, it does it all, really. To learn more about the Sub 2K and that $100 rebate program, visit KelTecWeapons.com. That's KelTecWeapons.com. Tell them that Dana sent you.
The economy isn't growing. It's leaching. October jobs report is out, and it's not good. The U.S. added 150,000 jobs. However, a third of them are government jobs. After the Fed has paused interest rate hikes yet again, something has to give. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast. Podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Whew, all right. So first up, I told you yesterday that, that Rashida Tlaib had been censured. Bipartisan condemnation of her anti-Jewish people remarks. I mean, her pro-Hamas terror support. She reacted angrily, which we're going to talk about as well. Oh man, and then Cori Bush, she also lost her mind. Oh my gosh, the audio we got for you on this. There is a plan to, they said the plan to keep smoking bans in place to stop the next generation from buying cigarettes, says over in the UK, which I don't care about. I don't care. EV makers are turning to discounts. I don't care. I don't give a rat's ass what happens over in the UK. The king comes out and says, we're going to ban. EV makers are going to turn to discounts to combat the waning demand. You mean no one's rushing to buy cars that are so expensive and the battery replacement is as expensive as the cars? It's almost like we saw this coming. Credit card balances have spiked in the third quarter to over $1 trillion. It is a huge record. U.S. debt, the interest bill, the rockets past, I hate when people say a cool whatever, $1 trillion. It's not a cool. It's a steaming dump pile of $1 trillion is what it is. All right. So coming up, Virginia, Kentucky, the big loss in Ohio. More. There's a new film that's out from the people who brought you The Chosen. And it's a great studio. They make some really good films. And the movie Sound of Freedom, The Chosen, After Death is their latest from Angel Studios. And it looks at the mystery of what happens. You know, what happens after people die? When people die, there's all of these stories about, you know, life after death and some very interesting experiences. And it's what makes it more interesting is that there's always some kind of common denominator involved. And so this film very uniquely uses first-person accounts from people who have gone through this. But it also incorporates careful research and scientific knowledge and philosophy to paint a very well-rounded picture as to what life could be like in the next realm. Now, it's rated PG-13. There's a lot of nationally known experts that have been everywhere, BBC, Nat Geo, all of it. And they explore this plus these firsthand experiences. It is a very insightful deep dive into what could be on the other side. The film After Death is in theaters now. To find a theater near you and purchase tickets online, you can visit angel.com/Dana and leave your preconceptions at the door. Prepare for a never before seen glimpse into what the next life could entail in After Death in theaters now. Get your tickets today or pay it forward. Visit angel.com/Dana. That's angel.com/Dana. After Death, the end is only the beginning. Rated PG-13.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
Of a lack of care and the lack of understanding and a lack of seeing the humanity of folks who look like Rashida Tlaib. It's outrageous that my colleagues are blatantly attempting to silence the only Palestinian American representative right here. It's outrageous, but it's not surprising. And let me tell you, it's not surprising because this place is where 1,700 members of Congress, this elected body, enslaved Black people. It's not surprising.
Democrats, the same damn party you're on now. Jack wagon. Golly, I can only take so much of that, man. It's like hearing nonstop nails on a chalkboard. Cori Bush losing her mind because Rashida Tlaib was censured. The irony of getting up there and being like, and this is where they've been, where they've been slavery. Yeah, your party that you're part of now. And they still have that mentality. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. My friend Brian Kilmeade's going to be joining us later today. Brendan Carr, FCC chair, because I haven't even told you what they're going to be proposing for that. I ain't told you about that. We ain't even there yet. The issue of her being censured, because they voted to censure her, and they're, oh my gosh, and she was like, he's our own. Blah, blah, blah. Do you think she'd ever was violence? Blah, blah. Oh, I don't even care. Shut up. Words have consequences, right? You can't be going out there and stumping for Hamas and think that there's not going to be a consequence for it. You know, she's not precious. Good heavens. It's the pro-Hamas caucus, and they're really mad about it. And I really wish that we would be, you know, I'd like to focus a little bit on the disjointedness of the Democrat Party. Because this has turned out to be a real, real bit of a pickle for him. I was going to sound like Letterkenny. It's a bit of a pickle for you. It is. Because they can't. I mean, it's amazing that you have somebody like that. I can't believe I'm saying this. I had this problem yesterday. And then John Fetterman wallpapered his office with the posters of the kidnapped Israelis. He wallpapered his whole, all the walls. I mean, I don't think he did. I don't think he can put his pants on, but I think he had people do it. Maybe. I'm wanting to give credit where credit is due, even when it twists my soul into a knot. Cause again, I'm petty. There's a big divide in the Democrat Party. People who like terrorism and people who don't. People who hate Jews and people who don't. So it's the same Democrat Party, right? The irony of Cori Bush standing up there in defense of someone who hates Jews, just like the Klan, the party that she's a member of, that was the activist wing of the party that she's a member of that made the moves in Congress to remove my ancestors and put them on the trail of genocide, the party in Congress that didn't want freed men and women who happened to be Black, that's the party. That is them historically. That's the party that didn't want women to vote. They have always been on the wrong side of history. The irony of her saying that on the floor. Can we talk about the abortion thing? Speaking of women voting. Some of these people can't make me feel like I'm mentally 200 years old. So we were talking about the election results. I think that there's a big, giant warning flag here for 2024, and I don't think nobody wants to pay attention to it. I think they're secretly talking about it. in community centers, quietly at the table in restaurants. I think they're talking about it in their living rooms during Christmas parties and the like. But nobody wants to talk about it publicly. I think Virginia is a portends what 2024 could look like. Now, here's Virginia. As I was saying, Virginia is a very unique state. It's a blue state. Republicans overperformed in 2021, had a lot to do with COVID, the lockdown, etc. Now, I'm going to break this down for you and very clinically. So I need everyone to take whatever affiliated hat they have, whether you love you some Ron DeSantis or you love you some Donald Trump or you love you some Mitch McConnell or you hate you some Mitch McConnell or you love you Lindsey Graham or whatever. I don't care right now. I'm looking at this very, very clinically. If there's one thing to know about me, I want to win in 2024, and I will cut at anything that is a hurdle, including refusals to have honest conversations due to cult of personality. I cannot abide that. You can acknowledge things and like whomever you want still. Doing one does not forfeit the other. But if you want to win as I want to win, we got to talk about strategy. So here's the weird thing with Virginia. In 2020 and 2021, because Glenn Youngkin still has two more years as governor, so that's a bright spot. Democrats flipped enough seats in the House of Delegates, and they staved off a challenge to take over the Senate. As I said, Republicans overperformed in 2021. They also had redistricting battles. So this, honestly, I didn't have the brightest of hopes for this because of that reason. It's been a blue state reliably for a while. Last time they went for a Republican president was in 2004. Yet they are getting more Republicans. It is a slow and steady organic build that's built on issue and not on a person, not even around Youngkin. It is going to complicate taxes, further decreasing taxes in Virginia. There's a couple of things that it's going to complicate. Youngkin worked really, really hard at getting the vote out. He is a very interesting brand of Republicanism because the Republicans in Virginia have taken great lengths to separate themselves from the overall Republican Party brand. Here's one thing that I need everybody to understand. And I'm not saying I agree with this. I'm not saying this is me telling you how people are viewing this. They view, no matter what you think of Trump, they view Trump and the GOP as the same. Now, I get it because he was the head of the party. He was the former president. But they refuse to acknowledge, because with the Democrat side, it's weird to have nuance, right? So I get why they want to apply this to the right. The reason I say that the Youngkin in Virginia's Republican brand was very different is that he never did any kind of in-person campaigning with Trump. I think Trump had said he'd come in and do it, and Youngkin declined, and he never had that happen. Never did. I mean, I think he did. He made one phone call. I think he did recorded a phone call for him. That was it. They've been very, very separate, and they focused very closely on the issues, on taxes, on things like that. And they're still building. Like I said, Democrats want to take this and they want to spin it as being a mandate against that, but it's not, because we're still, as people who are conservative or Republican, they're still registering more Republican voters. And it, particularly in some of these northern Virginia counties, they were outperforming Trump. I bring this up because no matter how hard those Republicans in Virginia were trying to triangulate and walk a very straight path of not aligning themselves with one Republican faction or another, it didn't matter because the presumption of what they were still stuck, if that makes sense. You have to realize that, again, elections are determined by the margins. They are not determined by a whole herd of voters. If you have a ton of people who like Ron DeSantis, or if you have a ton of people who like Donald Trump, I'm sorry, but going into a general election, those aren't going to be the bigger players in the election. The people who are going to be determining it are the outliers. They're the independents. They're the moderates who are persuaded to come over. They're the people who are not knee deep in politics and reading about the issues every day like you are. Those are the margins that we play in. Those are the people that determine elections. For better or for worse, that is how it works. And you have to manage the cards that you are dealt. This is not the time to bitch about the cards that are in your hand or how many cards you got. You have to strategize if you want to win. I want to win. I want to win more than I want to be petty. I want to win more than I want to bitch and moan about the choices that I have. I want to win because everything's, this is it. This is it. The IRS stuff, ESG, conflict. Think about how much we're all going to, we won't have any incomes to tax. We'll have gun control. You're gonna have half of your what you own banned. I'm not just saying that's what they want to do. They keep trying to push forward EOs. They'll push forward a bill when they can. They want to pack the Supreme Court. Oh, we didn't win enough elections to nominate enough people of our ideology? Well, that's okay. Rules out the window. We're just gonna stick a whole bunch of stuff on it, like somebody who had just gone to Hobby Lobby, picked up a package of rhinestones, got a brand new headband, and we're going to craft glue some rhinestones all over it. Just stack it up. Brrr. That's what they want to do with the Supreme Court. They want to bedazzle it. That's what they want to do. This is all the stuff that's coming up in 2016, or 2024, sorry. This is everything that's happening. This is all true, and I'm not exaggerating. Not at all. And do you want DEI in every kid's college? Do you want ESG? Do you want to be canceled from your bank? You want to have all your kids go die in foreign land over foreign disputes? This is what's up in 2024. Do you want to have everything that's everything determined by AI in the future, all of the programming and perceptions for that set by Ibram X. Kendi-esque people? That's what's up for 2024. So back to my point with this. This is why it's so incredibly important to have these conversations. Because all the people in the margins, they don't like Trump. They don't. I don't know how to tell you this, besides just spitting it out. They don't. People on the right are terrified to talk about it. People on radio are afraid to lose their jobs. People on TV don't want to upset a potential contributorship. Nobody wants to talk about it. Everyone just is like, well, we don't want to say what we think, so we're just going to stand in the middle and kind of keep our balance. In order to move forward with strategy and discussion, you got to push the envelope. And it's not about doing it maliciously or in a petty way. It's about you want to win, you got to push the envelope. People in the margins, guys, they don't like him. I'm not saying they like anybody else right now. I'm just saying they don't like him. We got how many elections to prove this? Two. He won the blue wall, promptly lost it. I've seen the data. This is what I do for a living. And when I go on television and I go out there for 5 minutes and I talk about stuff, what you don't see is the big stack of paper, especially on election night that they hand you. It's not a producer that hands you this. They hand you that. You have your own highlighter. You go through and you look at, a stack of data for trends. You go and you look county by county, state by state, and you look at who's affiliated with what and where they're going, where they want to go, what the top. That's why I said in 2016, immigration was the number one issue, particularly in blue wall states. That was the number one issue with everybody, even more so than jobs in a number of states. That was really winning over these blue collar, longtime Democrat voters. But guess what? A lot of them felt unfulfilled. And so it started tapering off come 2018. I think Virginia is a snapshot of what 2024 will look like, depending on the players at the table. That's the way it is. Now, a lot of people say, but polling. Polling is a joke. National polls are stupid. They're absolutely moronic. They are the same national polls that had Jeb Bush winning back in 2016. No one pays attention to any of that. But what they do pay attention to is they look at national polling. They look at turnout and enthusiasm and money raised. We got to talk about the enthusiasm because that was another thing that's been happening. We're going to get into Ohio. Ohio, that was a whole other issue. We have to have a conversation about the abortion stuff. The Ohio issue, Democrats go out there and they tell women that abortions are going to be banned, and this is what's going to happen, and this is why you can't vote for Republicans. This is why there needs to be careful messaging on this, because we live in a stupid world where people can say stupid things and stupid people will believe them. Yes, I meant to say that. Stupid people will believe them. I don't treat voters like babies. They're grown-ass people who pay taxes. And I don't treat politicians as kings. So here's the thing. This is going to be a state-by-state thing. They kept saying in Ohio, and we're going to deep dive into this a little bit more, because there was a poll out of Ohio Northern University that when the language in the referendum was very interesting, because they changed in their state constitution in Ohio. They basically now have abortion on demand as birth control up till birth codified. And there are there's prohibitions on restrictions. But what's more is that parental consent is not required for any of this anymore. And that even extends to unnecessary gender mutilation surgeries for minors who want to change the perception of their sex. It goes way beyond. Even Mike DeWine, who is a pretty moderate Republican, was like, this goes way too far. It's like one of the most permissive laws in the land now. It goes into effect in 30 days. And this is, Democrats are saying, oh, this is, you know, a huge hit against Roe v. Wade. And they're going to really, really push this going into 2024. And Republicans got to get on board with how they're going to talk about this now. We're gonna discuss this. I'm going to tell you, it's not the Nancy Mace way. We're going to talk about this here coming up, because we got to have a hard conversation about that, too. But that's what we love to do and make fun of everybody here. Our partners, new partners to the show. Now, this, I like to be prepared, and I always pat myself on the back, especially when we had that big, giant freeze and everything went to Hades. And then we had another freeze. Now I have a big old generator and I got all this stuff. You have to be prepared for whatever life throws your way. I am of the mindset that I would rather have it and not need it than need it, not have it. Because if you find yourself in the ladder, man, you're in a world of pain. When emergencies strike, the last thing that you want to worry about is how you're going to feed yourself or your family. So this is where Wise Food Storage comes in, right? Right now, you can save $50 on your four-week survival food kit. You get free shipping, and you can get all of this and check out everything that they have at preparewithdana.com. Now, you get things like a two-bucket four-week survival food kit, where it's 2,200 calories plus 64 grams of protein per day, 28-day supply. Everything is made with high-quality U.S. ingredients, which is what I like. Freeze-dried, dehydrated. It's very easy to prepare. 25-year shelf life. Now, you can get, like, some really good stuff. Like, you get tortilla soup, teriyaki rice, all kinds of good stuff. Order yours today at preparewithdana.com. Save $50 on your four-week survival food kit. Plus, get free shipping. Visit preparewithdana.com. That's preparewithdana.com.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
You know, by the way, you know, Mrs. Clinton did win the popular vote.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gosh, at some point, I think these old broads don't need to be in front of a camera. They need to be in front of a nurse at a retirement home. And that seems like it's more appropriate. That makes sense. Popular vote stuff makes sense. If you don't understand what a republic is, you don't understand why the republic is established as it is, and you don't understand that a direct democracy is mob rule. But, you know, I mean, women like that make me question women's right to vote. I'm going to be honest about it. Oh, man, I am full of it today. I am basically... Oh, man, I'm Al from Married with Children right now. I mean, that is no ma'am. That's me. We got a whole hour. Brian Kilmeade's going to join us. The FCC chair, FCC commissioner Brendan Carr is going to join us as well. Coming up, stick with us. Partners over at Patriot Mobile for 10 years. This has been my cell phone service. Love the folks at Patriot Mobile and love everything that they do. In addition to providing you with great coverage. I mean, they have just unbeatable plans. They're super affordable at a time when everybody's broke. But they also have great, dependable nationwide coverage in all three major networks. So you get the best service in your area without funding the far left. And when you switch, you can talk to one of their awesome 100% U.S.-based customer service team members. They make it easy to switch. You can keep your phone. You can keep your number. You can upgrade, get a new number, get a new phone. It's entirely your choice. And ask them about their coverage guarantee. And don't forget to use code Dana to get free activation. So visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT and mention that offer code Dana so that you get free activation. PatriotMobile.com/Dana, 972-PATRIOT. Make the switch today.
Another quick point, if I can. I just wanted to come to Ohio. On the constitutional right to abortion,
yeah,
it's leading quite comfortably right now, including Donald Trump on Lake County. We used to go out all the time when Ohio was competitive. People would go out to Stark County as a swing county in Ohio. It's where Canton, Ohio is. People would go out there and say, this is your bellwether county in America. Donald Trump won it quite handily. It's not a bellwether county anymore. It's a Republican county, and yet 64% at the moment, 20% of the vote in Stark County, 20% of the vote in statewide in a state Donald Trump carried handily. A lot of this up here was red for Trump. It's green for yes.
Man, all the spinning, though, that I'm seeing from the media, this is the other big issue that we got to talk about last night, the abortion issue in Ohio. The spin, though, I'm seeing on this, Democrats are trying to make you believe something that is not there. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash, top of the second hour. My friend Brian Kilmeade is going to join us later on in the show, in this hour. And we were going over Virginia. I was explaining how Virginia, that actually wasn't, that's not a slam dunk loss. And I just want to recap really quickly. Youngkin, A, is governor still for two more years. B, you had a ton of districting that pounded Republicans into the sand. Three, it's they won like what? Democrats won. Was it barely? Was it 1% statewide? It was only like by a point across the state of Virginia. So it's not this slam dunk. And that is in a blue state that has gone blue for God knows how long. I mean, you know, forgive me, but I mean, it's been 2004. I think heaven knows how long it was that they've been voting blue for so long. It is a heavy blue state, and Republicans overperformed because of COVID lockdown, schools, et cetera, in 21, and then have built on that success. So that is actually a good thing that Democrats don't want to acknowledge. So I kind of figured that I didn't think we were going to have like a 2020, like a Youngkin part two blood. But he's worked really, really hard to build upon those wins. And they have really kind of, I think, chartered Virginia and Florida a path forward to try to build Republican branding to where we're not always playing in the margins. So that is why I'm like, that's actually not a major. I think they need to stop with that. And I have something up at the newsletter over this. But I also think, too, one of the things you need to take away from Virginia is that people will go to the polls, and if they will vote to stop what they look at as a... my friend Derek Hunter over at The Hill has a piece. He says, Virginia showed how easily the people who don't like Trump could be motivated to go to the polls and take that hatred out on any Republican. He thinks that it translates into a huge loss for Trump. I get what he's saying with that, and I think that there's some merit to it because we play in the margins. However, I also think at the same time, the state of Virginia, the way that the lay of the land politically for Virginia has made it a little bit more complicated than just that kind of summary. We do have to talk about Ohio, though, because this is going to be a problem that Republicans have to deal with. This was, this was 57-43. This was a major sweeping change to their state constitution. And they advertised it as like a Roe restoration, but it wasn't a Roe restoration. It went way beyond Roe. And the referendum itself was kind of confusing because they had a lot more than just abortion onto it. I mean, you also had parental restriction, a prohibition on any kind of restriction for a number of things. Including no, you can't have parental consent. It's not a requirement now for medically unnecessary, like gender transitions or gender surgery, mutilation surgery, all of that. But it codifies abortion on demand as birth control up until birth. It's in the state's constitution. It removes the consent requirements, like I said, not just for abortion, but also for sterilization, all of that. Fetal viability how that is defined is left now entirely up to the discretion of whatever doctor. And as I noted, the governor, Mike DeWine, who's a moderate, even said that this went way further than anything. And it is now one of the most, if not the most, permissive state in the union on abortion. So it was a hard fought battle. But now here you're looking at this. Since Dobbs, you got 0-7 with referendums across the country. And Ohio, which is kind of a red state, this is the first time a state of that political affiliation has amended its constitution to this point. Now, you are seeing arguments, and I've seen them coming from Republicans as well as Democrats. And I think that there's a lot of nuance here. Because this is a fight worth having, number one. Number two, it's a fight that just got started. And number three, I think the smart thing to do is look at how everything was handled in Ohio, including messaging, because Democrats hammered it with money and malicious messaging. Republicans have got to get really good, really fast at messaging. And you also have to understand, as I get it, do you want, there's the right is divided into two sides. There are people who think it has to be all or nothing. And if you don't believe in an all or nothing approach to abortion, then you don't care about life as much as we do. And then there is the, well, we care about life, which is why we want to have lasting victories. So we approach incrementalism, slowly persuading people along the way and adding to these victories. These are the two approaches. And if I'm being honest, the all or nothing approach has been very adversarial to the incremental approach. I'm fine with whatever wins. I want to save lives. And if it means saving lives incrementally, then we'll say, because if clearly in some of the messaging, the all or nothing stuff isn't working and it wasn't even tried in Florida. That is not saying that you support abortion. And I think it is malicious. And I think it is a sin for people to argue otherwise. And I question their motivation and what side they're on. If you're going to question and impugn someone else's character for not supporting an all or nothing approach, then by God, I'm going to question your character and motivation to the contrary. It's deserved. Have we established that? Can we move on now? These two sides have got to figure out how to coexist in the right. Because I've seen people from both sides go at each other. And I'm just like, how is this helping? Because now we're seeing this kind of stuff play out in Ohio. I had people, friends of mine that I've known for years, that were at each other's throats over approach for this. In fact, two of them aren't even talking now anymore. It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Like, you'd think that you guys weren't on the same side. And one of them is an all or nothing, you know, total Susan B. Anthony, great organization, but you got to realize, all or nothing, who literally, like, said in a text to my other friend, who is a different pro-life group and literally writes for a pro-life website, that, you know, I question your commitment to the pro-life cause. And at that point, I couldn't even be the referee. We can't be doing that. Because if you're wanting to save lives, it has to be about saving lives. I understand both sides. I get it. But do you want to win? That's the question. Do you want to win? Or is this about your side? Do you want to win? Or is this about you being proven right with your approach? I want to win more than I care about filleting my own ego. Do you want to win? That's what it comes down to. That's the first thing that Republicans have to establish. The second thing they have to establish is to really assessing the genuine concern for the dignity of every life. And that's the other thing. Because what you want it to be isn't necessarily reflected in reality. And so you have to take inventory of how you message on that. So I'm looking at, you know, some of the stuff with Ohio. And you know, they had, and I compare it, like Georgia's different. Georgia, they got a heartbeat bill into law. They don't, Georgia, from what I understand, they don't have referendums that are push voter driven push referendums. Florida, they signed theirs in. And what works in those states, I don't think anyone is arguing that either DeSantis or Kemp or other governors where they've seen these kind of victories, that they're trying to do this nationally. But in states like Ohio, where you have this, I mean, when you look at the referendum here, the language is really weird, because like I said previously, you know, it wasn't just about abortion. I mean, this was, they literally had a phrase called miscarriage care in here. They went into parental consent on sterilization. I mean, all kinds of stuff. It was way. And there were also, they were very hazy in describing viability to voters, or even acknowledging when, you know, a heartbeat begins. And I think that they were also not, I mean, obviously the people pushing this were not honest about the voters, what they're going to have to pick up their end of the deal for voting for this in terms of funding abortion as birth control. But it covered a ton of stuff. Like they had fertility treatment in here. They had a huge fight and there were lawsuits, even how they were going to, how this was going to be described on the ballot. This was all leading up to it. There was an Ohio Northern University poll, let me pull this up, that found that the changes for the referendum, people would support it differently based on how the referendum was worded. So it would be the same stuff, but they would word it differently every time, and the support dramatically changed. This was at Ohio Northern University. So what happens when you have two complicated a thing? They said change in language will have an effect on support for issue one. And it gets into all of this stuff. I mean, there's a lot in here. But the situation, I saw this tweet from Nancy Mace. She tweeted, quote, "We can't save lives if we can't win elections. If pro-life Republicans want to actually save lives, they have to learn to listen to women and talk about abortion and contraception. Roe repeal changed the playing field and the conversation." She says that too many, she's accusing people of too many are stuck in the, too many are stuck in the past policies and arguments. We have to talk about common sense abortion restrictions and promoting, I hate the phrase common sense anything. She says it a lot, including about guns. Promoting expanded access to contraception over the counter. We need to make sure exceptions for rape and incest are included in every law we pass. Blah, blah, blah. We have to constantly remind voters they don't agree with the left's actual position of abortion. She's pretty moderate, Nancy Mace. First off, rape and incest exceptions are in all of them already. So right off the bat, I'm immediately discrediting her and I'm questioning her motivation. She's trying to, I think she's trying to flex here. And I think if you're going to flex, then you need to make sure you know what you're talking about. Because rape and incest exceptions are included in every single one. That's number one. Twice Republicans have tried to pass over-the-counter birth control and Democrats defeated it. Happy to go in a deep dive on that and how Planned Parenthood helped bankroll it. Because Planned Parenthood wants to protect. That's like a big moneymaker for them. They want to protect that. Two times Republicans tried to make that happen. Democrats defeated it both times. One time they wouldn't even let it out of committee. So I feel like Nancy Mace can't save lives or win elections if she doesn't know what the hell she's talking about. Got to get smarter. Like with the Hester A shirt. Man, this is like, she's 3 for 3 now.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So in Dallas, shoplifting is up by 73%. Retailers are rushing to put merchandise out of reach. I love it how they say the shopping experience is changing. Yeah, well, that's 73% theft. I wouldn't call that shopping. Dallas, guess how much shoplifting increased in Los Angeles? 109%. Highest reported retail theft in the first half of this year. That is the Council on Criminal Justice. They analyzed 24 major cities. And they, I mean, literally, like, for instance, they have Walmarts in Northeast Dallas. They show you have to put men's underwear in a case with the lights up above it and all kinds of stuff. Like Kroger added security gates to some stores to prevent quick exits. I mean, that's crazy. Craziness. Oh boy. And USA Today says this guy went in for appendicitis and they were going to move his appendix. But apparently they did something else, a lot more.
What?
Yep. King County Superior Court. Last year, a man at Lake Forest Park, University of Washington Medical Center, and two UV surgeons. According to the suit, he went in with appendicitis, was taken into surgery. And this during surgery, the doctors say that they could not locate his appendix, and they removed part of his bowel instead. And then they said afterwards the pain was worse than a surgery. Bowel contents spilled into his abdominal cavity. He was much sicker. So they had diverticulitis, and oh my gosh, he had to have all these other surgeries. And yeah, so they're in a big old bad lawsuit. Yeah, duh. How do you not, like, how does that, what in the world? How does that even happen? Let's see. Also, a hotel valet stole a car. We had the story about Zuckerberg from 2 days ago, and then got carjacked at gunpoint, like almost immediately after. So crime beget crime. Brian Kilmeade joins us next. Stay with us.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here. Bottom of the second hour. You can listen coast to coast terrestrially. You can stream the radio program. You can watch a simulcast on YouTube, Facebook, DirecTV, 347, all that good stuff. So this is a great, I love his books. My very good friend, Brian Kilmeade, who I've known for a very long time. I also don't think that he sleeps. I think that he just like goes somewhere and waits quietly in the shadows and then like, oh, it's wherever everybody else sleeps, because he will work late and then he gets up in the morning, goes, comes out with all these great books on history that offer these great deep dives and these amazing perspectives on stuff that you like, you normally, it's like something you always want to read more of but you never really have like a resource to do it. And he hits all of it. And he's got a new book out right now. Obviously, you know, Brian's a co-host of Fox and Friends and the Brian Kilmeade Show on Fox News Radio, best-selling author. His new book out yesterday, Teddy and Booker T. I love that. It sounds like actually a rock group. How Two American Icons Blazed a Path for Racial Equality. It is out now. He's got a great write-up in the New York Post about it as well. Brian, good to see you.
Dana, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. What a great studio you have.
Oh, why, thank you.
I don't know if it's a TV or radio show or both.
All of them. All of them. Thank you. Yeah, I got my big old light wall behind me and my big LED. It's not just like a screen. It's like all my huge LED light wall. I'll have to show you. One day when you're in Dallas, I'll have to have you in studio and you have to look at my giant rig, my desk, a 4.5 foot wide gaming screen. It is like an engineering marvel. Yeah, it's like I wish I could. I get on my little laptop and I'm disappointed. So your book, congratulations, because this is like the millionth book that you've written. You're a factory. This is a story that I actually didn't know until I started reading about, you know, when I first heard that you were writing this book and I started kind of reading about it. Fascinating. You're talking about, you know, Teddy Roosevelt, obviously, and Booker T. Washington and how these two men came together. What a timely topic. Is that why you picked, because of everything that's going on in the world right now, you're like, this is a great story for now.
A little bit. I think I did a couple of things. I'm trying to move up through time. You know, I stumbled onto George Washington's Secret Six 20 plus years ago.
That's an amazing book. That's still one of my favorites.
Yeah, thanks. And I just kept like researching it on my own. Just, hey, you know what? Other people golf. I would just kind of look into it. I go, this could be a great movie. National Treasure with Nicolas Cage is out. I go, I got a better one. And it actually happened. And then after that came out, it did well. I thought, what's the next big thing that not many people talk about? And I came up with Jefferson. I always was fascinated by the War of 1812. Mm-hmm. Outside Texas, where you are, not many people know about the history of Texas. I thought Sam used to and be cool to look at. And then comes the Civil War. And before I read that, I read Booker T. Washington's Up from Slavery before I focused on Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln. And I go, this is unbelievable. How could a guy who is a slave till nine, no shoes, sleeping on the floor, one meal a day, never learned to read and write, eventually become the most successful educator in the country? An impact made in almost every continent with his curriculum. And then to read his story, it almost sounds like fiction. And then in his story and other books, Teddy Roosevelt's all over it and how much they meant to each other. And then I went out to talk to Tweed Roosevelt, the great grandson, who happens to be leading the Roosevelt School in my college. And I said, I'm thinking about doing this book. Is there anything there? Is this a reach? And he said, absolutely not. Yeah, Teddy had blind spots, no doubt about it. Some things he said makes you know that it's 1901. Hmm. And we haven't, you know, a lot of things change. But what he did with Booker T. Washington was phenomenal. It was underappreciated. And go for it. He helped me out with a bunch of books and resources. Tuskegee was a huge help because that's the university he founded that really changed the South in so many ways. And I just thought, let's tell this story. Stop talking about taking a knee at the World Cup. Stop talking about being a 49ers quarterback and feeling so upset about America that it's not worth playing football. Let's get a perspective on how far we've come.
That's a great story. Talking with our good friend Brian Kilmeade, his new book, Teddy and Booker T, How Two American Icons Blazed a Path for Racial Equality. You know, I look at the stories, I look at the leaders that we know through history. And it's, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's just because we're so limited in that we're living the now. I look at the infighting in the Republican Party. I look at the election results last night. Are we even going to be able to have any books like this from any leaders of our time now? I mean, I just wonder.
I mean, you got to go find them. You got to go find them. You got to bring them out. And what I do is I try to do things because there's so many cross currents of you go to make a speech and you realize the person who wants you to make a speech, if something happens with their company and they go wrong, I'm the keynote speaker at an event. So I just decided to create my own event. And when I go out, I talk about all the books. So like basically how America got great. So I'm going to be doing a Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm going to Pittsburgh. I'm going to be in, I got to shoot in Michigan, in Red Bank, New Jersey. So I'll be going out, but I talk about all of it. And I'm fascinated by the thirst people have about our history. Because a lot of people, if you're a math person, you're not focused on history. If you're a history person, you're not focused on math.
Right.
People are proud to be American, but now they got to defend that state. Why are you proud to be an American? Well, I feel like we're arming them little by little with story and story that why we are such an exceptional nation. Not a perfect nation.
Right. No nation's
perfect. But why are exceptional. Yeah. And why we're pushing back when they say Andrew Jackson and George Washington statue should stand and you shouldn't box up Teddy Roosevelt's statue and send it to North Dakota that was once in front of the Museum of Natural History, which he founded.
Yeah. It's like the Cultural Revolution with Mao, just like taking apart the old and try to put in something new. We're talking with our friend Brian Kilmeade. I want to pick your brain. You know, the election results yesterday. I'm fascinated with the spin that I'm hearing from Democrats on Virginia. I mean, you've talked about this a lot on your radio program on Fox and Friends as well, because Virginia was a blue state that, you know, Republicans overperformed in 21. There were some redistricting issues, obviously. But Youngkin's still governor for 2 years. Republicans still are making. I mean, I think that Republicans have covered a lot of ground just in a little bit. So I don't think that they should be as depressed about Virginia. How do you take that when you see the spin coming from like the Axelrods and everybody out there?
Well, I mean, it's still the razor's edge either way, the flip and hold or a hold and flip, whatever it is. I think it was because Youngkin put so much into it. He made himself put himself out so much. And you think he already shocked the world once, he's performing well. Why can't he just flip a few seats? How could that be? But, you know, I think for him personally, it's a setback. But it's not as if Oklahoma just won blue.
Yeah,
it's not
true.
Texas. If that where you're at. If Texas ever won blue, that changes everything forever.
There's another book for you right there.
Oh, yeah.
That history, I mean, if that ever happened.
It was, yeah, once was Democratic, as you know. But, you know, just to look at that, I think Youngkin's a bit of a step back because he's looking to stay on a roll and, you know, wait 2 years, come for 2028. So I think it is a setback for him, but it's not devastating. Mm. I just think it comes down to, you know, the Dobbs decision.
Yeah.
And how are you going to message it? Because three states at a time, they're going to try to, Democrats going to try to message that and put it on the ballot, four or five states every election cycle, and let their Republicans to message it. And whatever that message is, do it. They were running ads, as you know, in Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
Saying that Daniel, of a 12-year-old, saying I was raped by my stepfather, Daniel Cameron wants to make me have the baby. And he never responded.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's 51-47 for you.
Yeah, you got to, Republicans got to get a handle on this because, I mean, they have the winning message. I mean, clearly, I realize, you know, obviously that Georgia and Florida are not, you know, Ohio and not Virginia. They're very different. But in some way, the messaging can work. But is that something that comes from the RNC? Like, how do they make this work? How can they get cohesive on this?
Well, I just think there's a wrong way to answer it. And that is zero exemptions.
Yeah.
I think that when you tell a 9-year-old, that's also running. You have a DA who was running an ad and saying, I had a 9-year-old get pregnant because of an incest situation. Would Daniel Cameron make me have that baby? Now, his answer is no. Why did he say it? So, you know, whether they want a message and say, we're for the moms to make their decision, we want the states to make their decision. If you talk to Rhonda McDaniel, they know how to do it. She feels as though some people are uncoachable.
Yeah, it's when if you get into the weeds a little bit, then you get into, if you're explaining, you're losing. Because I think what was one of the cases, like in Pennsylvania, where it was a 12-year-old, but they had also established that technically that would have been detrimental to her health, so that fell under the exceptions for the maternal health. And I think that's applicable in Kentucky, but which is why I don't understand why Daniel Cameron, and I really like Daniel Cameron. I want him to be like a rock star for the GOP. I don't know why he didn't rise to that and answer it.
I don't either, because Rhonda McDaniel was in with on my radio show Monday, and she expressed frustration. I go, what do you think about Kentucky? And she said, what do I hope? I hope he wins. What do I think? I think these last set of ads are devastating. And then she sent them to me. And I go, wow. And I go, what did he say? And she said, nothing. Oh, they had no formal response to it. So
yeah, that's bad. They can't be doing that. So obviously Republicans got to get it together for that messaging for abortion, because you're right. I think they're going to put this on the ballot and in all of these different states, go bit by bit. They're looking at this just as incrementally as pro-lifers are. And do you think, too, that there's a faction, like there's a split in the Republican side? You got the all or nothings, and then the ones who are like, okay, it's about saving lives, even if we have to do it incrementally, and they're both hostile to each other.
I think, yeah, Republicans love disagreeing with each other. There's no doubt about
more it. Almost than Democrats. It's wild.
Right. I know. I was saying that we're watching in real time Republicans come apart with the whole speakers thing. But the next day, the Democrats showed they could do it better. Yeah. And what we're seeing now with the squad and more criticizing Joe Biden, including Barack Obama, and to have a crowd of college clowns, this Palestinian movement, defile the White House and call him Genocide Joe. Can you imagine if Trump was in office? Because he would have backed Israel to the hilt.
Yeah.
He would have let him go when it wouldn't even try to pause him.
Yeah.
This is the worst president ever.
And now,
can't believe he's doing this.
And now we have, instead of saying ceasefire, he wants a pause. And then now the messaging from the administration, talking to our friend Brian Kilmeade, the messaging from the administration is, well, we don't want Israel to stay in Gaza after all of this is said and done. I think they have to. I mean, they've had what, since 05, 06? I mean, I think it's proven that they got to now. It's theirs. It's done.
Yeah, at least to hold. I don't know if there's a UN peacekeeping force. I doubt it. If you turn it over to the Palestinian organization, they're afraid of Hamas.
Yeah.
Hamas, last time they were in Gaza, it lasted a month. There was an election. They got kicked out. They said, we'll never get kicked out. You know who told me this? One of the founder's sons, that son of Hamas.
Yeah.
That brought that book out. They did a movie on. And he said that they kept saying Hamas is not strong enough to overthrow the Palestinian Authority. And they got overthrown, got banished to the West Bank. And all they did was collect money for the leadership.
And they're losing, aren't they losing relevance in West Bank too?
Yeah. Hamas is more popular in the West Bank than Gaza. And now you want to give Mahmoud Abbas more money? He's already got a private plane and $35 million in cash. It's all our money. Mm. It makes no sense.
Well, it's this administration. He doesn't make sense. Our friend Brian Kilmeade, Teddy and Booker T, how two American icons blazed a path for racial equality. My friend, if you're in Dallas, give me a shout and we'll go out for some good Texas brisket.
I am, because I'm going to be at the Bush Museum. I'm going to be at his library.
All right.
So
let's talk.
I'll find out. I'll text you, Dana.
All right. Sounds good.
We'll make this work.
Yes, sir. Sounds good. Congrats on the book, as always. Love the radio program. Love watching you in the mornings as well on Fox and Friends.
Thank you.
You always do great work. I hope you sleep at some point, but you don't look like you need it. Thanks, Brian.
All right. Thank you. Go get him, Dana. Thank you.
Brian Kilmeade, his new book, Teddy and Booker T, How Two American Icons Blaze the Path for Racial Equality. I mean, can you have a story like that today? That's why I love history so much.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Let's see here. Man, I got a couple. There's one I want to read, but I don't know if I have the courage to do it yet. So we'll come back. But let's talk about this Airbnb host, shall we? Airbnb host was shocked after finding a Florida man hiding under her bed. What? So the Airbnb host found a Florida man hiding under the bed in a unit, I said her, but as he was cleaning up after a guest's stay, Luis Lopez showed the moment that he spotted the Florida man. The police had to get involved. He didn't press charges, but it's funny because it's on video, and he was cleaning this unit, and he discovered the dude under the bed with his phone plugged into the charger. And Luis goes, "You got to get out from under the bed, bro. This isn't our Airbnb." I mean, it's on video. He's like recording the guy under the bed with his phone charging. And then he put up a second video where police had to deal with the problem because the guy would leave. And so he said that the guests who stayed in the unit had let this guy in and then allowed him to remain there when they had left. And so because he never broke in, the guy like never pressed charges. He said they let him in there and then they left. And so he stayed there and tried to hide. And so he goes, "I did take it up with the renter and we're getting that under control." I thought that was a nice way that he you know, although he's a dude. Can I just say that this is a dude? He's a larger dude, and he's got the luxury of that. If that had been a woman, that dude had been pumped full of lead, because a woman's not going to sit here and take that. I'm saying, you don't know. Like, can you give me some kind of affirmation that you're not going to rape me? Right. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm glad that he was able to take care of it. We're going to have to start widening Florida man here to include Florida bear. WPTV. Florida bear swipes a $45 taco. It's an expensive Taco Bell order. A $45 Taco Bell order from a porch after an Uber Eats delivery. Now, this bear walked up to the porch, stole their money, came back for the soda. Not even making this up. Longwood, Florida. I mean, it's on a bear straight up came up, captured on the doorbell camera. He went right up, grabbed the bag in his mouth. Then he came back and took the soda. He took all of it. Uber Eats reimbursed them for the bear. Man, I don't know. I just find that hysterical. This is like the fifth story in the 2 months that we've had where a bear is eating stuff, drinking somebody's beer, doing this. Man, those bears in Florida are wild. Stay with us. Third hour on the way.
What is true here is that every single one of them has not acknowledged the fact that Palestinians are dying in the tens of thousands, but will continue to say it is us who are not acknowledging humanity. Rashida will stand strong.
General ladies, time has expired.
The movement will continue for liberation until every single ladies, time has expired. Has the right to live.
Gentleman from Maryland
in
is ready.
Oh my gosh, they live in liberty now. They just chose to elect terrorists, and then the terrorists decided to use all the resources. You absolute idiot, Ilhan Omar. Some people's kids, am I right? Top of the third hour. Dana Lash here with you. Always good to be with you. You can listen coast to coast. Oh, heaven help us all. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream the show. All of this. And you can also watch the simulcast, Channel 347, DirecTV, also obviously YouTube and Facebook. So, again, there was a ceasefire in place October 6th. They were saying now they want a ceasefire that they want. You can't go back to October 6th after October 7th for a number of reasons. They had a ceasefire. Hamas violated it. So now they're like, well, let's try another one. No, because they've never worked. Can I drop this in slag via Lorraine? John Kirby saying, okay, now apparently the White House isn't in favor of a ceasefire. Wait a minute. Now, a pause or a ceasefire? Or the pause, ceasefire? Cease, pause, fire. Listen.
But just to be clear, to kind of reset here, when we talk about a ceasefire, when you use that term, when that term is applied, a general ceasefire, it connotes a cessation of hostilities for an indefinite period with the purpose of finding an end to the conflict. Usually when you get into a ceasefire, it's when you think you're at the end game and it's time to negotiate. Go to the table and brass tacks here, how are we going to end this war? And we don't support that at this time. A ceasefire right now benefits Hamas. It certainly also legitimizes what Hamas started on October 7th.
What the hell is their messaging? I mean, I like this one. Okay, this is what we go with. Go with that one. Because at first they're like, well, maybe a pause. So KJP is going to have fun. So is that the official position, or is that Kirby like, nah, I'm going rogue? I mean, it does make sense because it only does benefit Hamas. That's true. It's dumb. It's just stupid. Dumb at this point. So it only benefits them. We'll see. In the meantime, I haven't even told you. We got Brennan Carr coming up. I haven't even told you about this. This is crazy. And, and by the way, really quickly, apparently House Oversight just subpoenaed Hunter Biden and James Biden and Rob Walker. It's going to be so fun. The FCC is, the administration is proposing, they're making all kinds of, doing all kinds of stuff that has nothing to do with saving people money. They want the FCC to adopt these crazy rules that would give the federal government a complete mandate to micromanage via Brendan Carr every aspect of how the internet functions. So he's the commissioner of the FCC. He has been warning about this net neutrality stuff. He's like, the federal government would even manage how ISPs allocate capital and where they build to like what we can purchase, like as services. And from the money that they make and how they market and advertise services and even like any kind of discount you can receive. That is crazy. That's crazy. This is like some Soviet level control on this. Major Soviet level control. I mean, this is the government trying to extend. I mean, basically, they're trying to facilitate a total government takeover of broadband, is what it is. And they want to pull one of these, well, we got to pass it to find out what's in it, kind of things. This was in the, because the FCC, they're trying to put, progressives are trying to put this provision in for broadband. And this was like, they've been doing this since back last summer. It's the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. It's like 1,000-some-odd pages. I mean, they literally have a thing in there, sport fish restoration. Better best practices for battery recycling. That's in that. Oh, wait, hang on. Oh, they also, I'm not making this up. Limousine compliance with federal safety standards. That is in the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, Kane. But then you get into the, like, all the way towards the end of it, like 800-something pages later, digital discrimination. So the provision directs the FCC to adopt rules to prevent digital discrimination of broadband access based on income level, race, ethnicity, color, religion, or national origin. Based on. So it's like very similar to on the ground of like disparate treatment. And it's FCC section 60506 rules. You can't deny service from people already. I don't know why they don't want to look at just different treatment or disparate treatment, but they want to look at impact. So that's what this is. This is, and we're going to talk to Brennan Carr over this because this is an argument to open the door of a total federal takeover of broadband, already of the internet. We're already seeing this though. I mean, we're already seeing this with censorship. I told you just a little bit ago, it was Judiciary Committee. Let me pull this up. They had Jim Jordan, who on Judiciary, who was telling everybody about how the government was censoring conservative voices. It was a bombshell report. He posted this just the other day showing how DHS and the CISA and the State Department and Stanford work together to censor people before the election. They're still doing it. Even now, censoring people, even so far as coronavirus. So let me tell you what I got in the mail yesterday. So we have You know, the simulcast, we are a nationally syndicated radio show first, and then we simulcast the radio program, and it carries on YouTube and Facebook and Channel 347 DirecTV via the first, right? So that's how you can see the stuff that we're talking about. So I got this really weird email, and I posted a screenshot of it. And it was reaching out from YouTube. You know, it just seems like it's very innocuous. Just, you know, hi, it's just YouTube reaching out. Partner support at Google. Somebody named Lucy writes, quote, "Hi, Dana. I'm Lucy from YouTube's community outreach team, reaching out to let you know that the videos, quote, exclusive Dr. Tess Lori on the safety of ivermectin, suppression of info, and Dr. Robert Malone, the propaganda pushed by the White House is not supported by the data, have been removed from the Dana Lash YouTube channel because they violated our policies pertaining to medical misinformation. Countervailing views, which we refer to as EDSA context, on those remarks are not provided in the video, in the audio, title, or description. Though the videos have been removed, there's no penalty applied to the channel. Thanks, Lucy."
Who do I punch?
Lucy's a punchable name, isn't it? Well, the fact that she is insisting that those videos violated their policy pertaining to medical misinformation is itself medical misinformation. Because ivermectin did treat symptoms well. And YouTube, you can literally munch down a ginormous bag of male copulatory organs. That's misinformation to say that ivermectin and the safety of it, to say that it's misinformation to talk about it. And Dr. Robert Malone is correct. How much do you want to bet that Lucy is a purple-headed former barista who lucked into a Google YouTube job?
Or a man.
It's ma'am. Right? Just saying. And then she acts like they did me a favor. They removed my content. They censored my voice. But they're telling me, oh, we didn't apply a penalty. The videos have been there for over a year. There is literally nothing in there that's misinformation. These are both doctors that I would dare say are smarter than Lucy. Way smarter. So they have repeatedly deleted my videos, demonetized me here and there, censored my speech, all related to coronavirus. And as I've said, the stuff that is discussed in these videos isn't even questionable now. These videos are several years old. It is known, established, and proven. This is just YouTube being fascist thugs and Lucy being a bitch. That's all it is. Come at me. I hope Elon Musk's eats their souls. Yes, Kane.
My first response is to get Dr. Malone back on the show and get Dr. Tess Lori back on the show. That's what I want to do.
What is... Oh, and then YouTube was like, can you share the video URLs with us? Oh, I didn't even see this. Oh, can I? They've been deleted, you dumb bitches. You deleted them. Oh, we're doing this now. You stupid morons. You mean the ones that you deleted?
You just got another email?
Yeah. Yeah, here we go. Oh, yeah. Yeah, these two, the ones that you deleted. Yeah, these are the ones that you deleted. This is what you said you removed. So, yeah, this is all on X.
Google's running YouTube?
Huh? Well, yeah, they do, apparently.
Like the decisions of YouTube Google is running? That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say this is what you falsely claimed was misinformation, correct? This is what you falsely claimed because you guys can literally eat all of it. All of it, YouTube. Oh, I don't care. You're so punchable. I'm doing this right now on a radio show. I don't care. This is what you falsely claimed was misinformation and it wasn't. I mean, they're two doctors. Which one of you bean counters is over here running the YouTube accounts? And you guys want to argue you guys are somehow more intelligent and informed than these actual doctors. Yeah, come on, fight me, YouTube. Seriously, fight me. We'll go round and round. Now, I would. People are like, you should go on Rumble. The first has my name on Rumble, and I don't get to access it or control it. That's been for a couple of years now, so I don't know how that's going. I don't know what that is. I've asked, and I'm like, so I can't. I could just create a name, new name for myself, I guess. But so I can't. But so you, I mean, maybe we just start putting everything on X. I want X to take over YouTube. How is it? This is not misinformation at all. And the idea that, well, you didn't have countervailing views, because there's a ton of countervailing views elsewhere in the world, you bimbo. There's a ton of them. This is my opinion. You don't get to be the boss of me. You don't get to tell me that I got to rustle the jimmies of somebody else who has a stupider opinion, and I can only have my opinion if I balance it out with someone who is way less smarter than me. No, not going to happen. Or provides crappier content that's going to sit here and try to push misinformation of the clot shot, right? Done with it. It's not a vaccine either. It's a stupid injection that people get that acts like Linus's blanket. It is a pacifier. That's what it does. It doesn't do jack crap. It doesn't do anything. I'll say a lot more. Ban me. Come at me. I'm so tired of you people. Oh my gosh. I know we got to get going into headlines, but I want to go pick a fight, Kane. The Irish ancestry me is coming out. Let's go pick a fight. All right, we gotta move.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, so first up here, I'm sorry, I'm dealing with all the YouTube stuff right now. Still, because these people. All right, I lost my stuff, Kane. I don't know where it went. Here it is. All right, first up. This is not a rerun. A killer whale unleashed a terrifying 45-minute attack on tourists, sank their actual yacht in Spain. I don't like this sentence. Killer whales have struck again in Spain as a tourist yacht sank. 45-minute horror attack. The Shell Jacques crew of a Polish tourist yacht told how they survived a terrifying 45-minute attack by a whole pack of killer whales. They could not save their boat from the devastating damage. It happened right around the Strait of Gibraltar on October 31st. The boat company said that the boat sunk, but all the crew survived. The company, they said in a statement that they were attacked by a pack of killer whales. They hit the rudder blade for 45 minutes, caused major damage and a leak. They had the crew safe and sound, but they're picking fights. The whales are there at the Rock of Gibraltar. FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr, next.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
Welcome back to the program. You can listen coast to coast to The Dana Show as we get rolling here at the bottom of this third hour. You can also stream the radio program, and you can watch the simulcast YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. We were just talking about YouTube fun. Yeah. Getting demonetized and having our videos pulled off of YouTube because, you know, all the fun stuff. And I can only imagine, think about this, what the government has been doing in collusion with the White House, this administration, trying to micromanage speech on everything from coronavirus to the efficacy of therapeutics or shots or anything like that, voting or really anything. I mean, gender, getting, you know, kicked off of social media, having videos pulled for gender, just talking about fact-based scientific stuff. Imagine that, like, stretched out and applied to all broadcast, all internet, broadband, everything. And that's exactly, I mean, this is terrifying. We've talked to Brendan Carr about this before. And if you're unfamiliar, Brendan Carr is Commissioner of Federal Communications on the Federal Communications Commission. And he's joining us via Skype. And he's talked to us, warned us about this before, but he also tweeted out publishing these rules that the president has called for. They are really, really wide in scope. He adds that these rules are going to give the federal government this huge mandate to micromanage literally every aspect of how the internet functions. It's a progressive takeover of internet, of broadband industry. And he joins us now. Brendan, Mr. Carr, as always, so appreciate you joining us and appreciate you continually warning us about this. I mean, I think that's a pretty accurate you know, comparison. I know for everything that we're dealing with digitally and suppression of speech, I mean, with this takeover, I mean, the way that I understand it, I mean, this details even if a consumer wants to receive a discount. I know this was buried on like page 800 of the infrastructure, whatever, after what was it, limousine compliance, something. But this is incredibly dangerous. No wonder they buried it.
Yeah, look, you're exactly right. And you're right to put this as part of a broader plan by the administration. You've been covering all of this. But you look at Chairman Jim Jordan and the work that he's done to uncover the censorship that's been taking place with the collusion between big government and Silicon Valley. And this is another piece part of it. You were exactly right. Tucked in one page of the 1,000-plus page 2021 Infrastructure Act was a provision on digital equity. And flash forward to today, and President Biden has now called on the FCC to implement that one-page plan in a way that is truly sweeping and breathtaking. The FCC would be arrogating, giving to itself this power to micromanage every single way that the internet functions, from the prices of it to where it can be built to the speed that people can get. We've never done this before. You know, you have to go all the way back to sort of the Ma Bell telephone monopoly of the New Deal era to find something where the government and the private sector were so closely blended. And again, it's part and parcel of an ideology of control that we're seeing coming out of this administration.
What, we're talking with Brendan Carr, who is on a commissioner on the FCC. They, the weird way that they're approaching this and adopting rules to prevent digital discrimination of broadband access, like what, no one's, where does it even come from? No one is sitting around thinking of discriminating against giant swaths of people when it comes to access.
Yeah, you're right. In fact, the FCC has been looking at this for 2 years. And the draft order that the agency put out said we found no real evidence of any intent by anybody to discriminate in the broadband market along the protected lines that the statute calls out. But the FCC says, never mind, we're actually not even going to look for discriminatory intent. We're going to adopt this sort of extreme view that if you have no intent to discriminate, but the effect, in our view, is to hold back digital equity, then you are potentially liable for millions, if not more. And also, you know, we've been limited up to now jurisdictionally over sort of ISPs and entities that actually engage in communication. And this decision would sweep in entire industry into our jurisdiction for the first time ever. And again, a lot of people focus on, you know, the White House and the House and the Senate and how those controls flip back and forth. But here's the truth. The administrative state, the alphabet soup of agencies, including the one I work, has such an impact on the daily lives of Americans. And approaching 12 of the last 16 years now, the administrative state has been in full control of the Democrats. And as you pointed out, it is just this progressive ideology that's taking over. In fact, it feels like at the FCC that we're effectively captured by the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democrat Party.
Yeah. Yeah. And isn't, I was reading FCC section 60506 already like prohibits any, I mean, there's already an established rule on this. So they're arguing about something that there's already an established prohibition on.
Yeah, there's this Infrastructure Act section, as you noted, but there's also pre-existing civil rights law. Obviously, that makes it illegal right to discriminate in a way that, you know, violates civil rights law. So this goes above and well beyond that. And again, it's just about sort of this rejection of free market capitalism. This isn't really a debate about around the edges, do reasonable people disagree? This is a document that we're going to vote on at the FCC that just reflects, you know, a worldview of decades in the past. It's as if this document was drafted in the faculty lounge of a Soviet studies department at some Ivy League university. It's the idea that the government has to have a seat right on the shoulder of every private sector decision. And, you know, where does it go from here? It's hard to tell, but again, it's part of this broader play for full control, whether it's jawboning social media into censorship or actually exerting control over the infrastructure itself.
And you've said, we're talking with Brendan Carr, and you can find him at Brendan Carr, FCC, Commissioner on the Federal Communications Commission. You'd said that you oppose the president's plan. The way that I understand it, you have until November to issue your rules on this, correct?
Yeah, the FCC is going to vote. Yeah, it's going to vote on it next Wednesday. There's a meeting at the FCC will vote on it. And the thing is, there's a lot of people in industry and other places that were trying to negotiate with FCC leadership to get a reasonable outcome here. in the last minute, the Biden administration directed the Commerce Department of State Patrol to file comments, you know, directing the SEC to effectively go full Leroy Jenkins in this proceeding. And so basically there were six or seven policy busters who could have done something reasonable and implemented the statute in a reasonable way, but every single one of those policy busters ended up going hard left, in my view, probably at the last minute in response to that direction from President Biden. And I think that's a mistake.
What gets me is they argue about discrimination and access. And I mean, I just literally last segment, I was explaining to my audience how YouTube's been taking down my videos and demonetizing, you know, certain aspects of my channel if it's on gender or which, you know, literally just saying that men are men and women are women, or talking about the differences in medical opinion as it relates to coronavirus and treatment. I mean, videos from like 2 years ago, even. I mean, would that not be an argument about the discrimination and access if the left wanted to have such an argument?
Yeah, exactly. If we really cared about the discrimination that is actually taking place in the internet ecosystem, it wouldn't take you to sort of some mom and pop ISP and what they're charging in a particular community. It would take you to the very clear political, religious, scientific viewpoint discrimination that's taking place by big tech. So if people were serious about discrimination in the internet ecosystem, that's where you would go. Of course, that's not where we're going at all at the SEC. That's not where the administration is going. The Federal Trade Commission could also take some action in these areas, and it doesn't. I think that's very telling.
Why? I mean, what is their motive for not doing that? I mean, obviously they like it, but they realize too that if you, you know, heaven forbid someone like me got in the White House, I am petty. I mean, I literally will go after the people that made life hard for conservatives. That's why I should never be in such an elected office. But I mean, what if you got somebody like me? I'd be like Gladriel with the one ring to rule them all. I mean, how they realize the Pandora's box that opens, right?
Look, I'm very much of the view that I'm happy having no ratchet. But I will not live in a world in which there is a one-way ratchet. So
right.
Here's the deal, everybody. We have no ratchets or we have two-way ratchets. So the decisions that we make here should be applied equally across the board. But look, we have seen a rejection among the progressive left in this country of the very concept of free speech. And it's been taking place, obviously, for a number of years. Free speech was a very cornerstone element of progressive ideology for a long time into the 60s and the 70s. And we talked about before, the modern day op-ed actually launched on the pages of the New York Times because they wanted a diversity of viewpoint. And we've now seen, particularly after the 2016 election, all of a sudden free speech on the internet may not be a good thing because it doesn't produce the outcomes at the ballot box that some people want. But I do think culturally in this country, putting aside gun regulation, we have to get back to embrace of diversity of viewpoints and defending the right of people to convey ideas, even when we don't agree with them.
Yeah, amen to that. I completely agree. Is this last quick question? So, I mean, you got next Wednesday. Are you confident of where you think this is going to go? Is this going to be defeated? Is this? I mean, how is this going to work?
Yeah, this is going to pass. So this is going to pass at the SEC next week. You know, the agency right now is 3-2, Democrats 2, Republicans. But, you know, the good news is we've made some good progress in the courts with Supreme Court sort of reining in some of the excesses of the administrative state. And so I think there's a good portion of this that will ultimately get tossed by the courts. But there's also a lesson here for industry. Remember, this was tucked in to the Infrastructure Act, which contained billions and billions of dollars for the broadband industry and other industries. And I think it's time for these industries to step back and say, there's no free lunch. When the government gives you money, it comes with strings. And this is a really tough, tough string. And again, I think it goes too far. But industry has to be very careful when they press for these massive spending bills in D.C. And then don't like how it's going to be implemented.
Yeah, that's a great point because they were happy to come up to the trough, but you know, there's always a price to pay. Brendan Carr, you can find him, Brendan Carr, FCC. Thank you so much for warning us about all of this. And thank you for the get out of jail free card. You know, I always check whenever you're on. Good to see
you. Exactly. Good to see you again. Yep.
Take care. We have more to come, folks, as we wrap up this third hour of the program. Yeah, he made a really good point there, too, about if this is really about discrimination and equal access, et cetera, then they would be going after the exact same things that I was just telling you about. I mean, I get so mad about that stuff because There are people that I know of who are on the left that have been online for as long as I have, and they have not ever experienced any kind of throttling or deletion of content or anything like that, because it expressed wrong think. That's not scientifically correct. It's not that it's, you know, there's nothing non-fact-based about it. It's just that they disagree with it. And instead of rising to the challenge of countering it with equal evidence or science or fact, they just want it struck from existence. So they don't have to defend their ideas. That's the thing about the left. It's always a one-way street because they're too damn lazy to defend their ideas. And they take this principle all the way to the FCC. And that's what we're seeing right now. Golly, he said it's going to pass. That sounds like a long, messy court fight. But you know what? Broadband, as he also mentioned, invites it because they wanted a free lunch. And look at everything that came with it.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's what I think, Mr. Secretary. I think you're a smart guy. Now, there are only one or two things going on here. Either you're not qualified to manage a Costco food court, or you believe in open borders.
Senator Kennedy. That's Costco Food Court. Welcome back. Dana Lash here with you. Woo! And the ongoing, this was Mayorkas talking about situation at the border. And he wouldn't answer as to whether or not, you know, do you think that maybe tons of people crossing at the border, does that maybe potentially create a huge risk for terrorist attacks here? He can't say. He just dodges. He just, isn't that lovely? Yay, lovely. Just wondering. FYI, just wondering. So make sure you sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. Lots of good stuff that goes out there regularly. Like, for instance, I had a write-up with write-up on the election. We were talking a little bit about this. You know, another note. And a friend of mine made this point about the Kentucky governor's race. I mean, yes, you have Beshear, who's kind of a moderate, but a lot of people looked at this as a proxy battle between McConnell and Beshear. And McConnell, I don't think he's going to be. I think after 2024, he will not be leader in the Senate. He's lost a lot of influence. And a lot of people looked at Daniel Cameron as Mitch McConnell's protege. And it's a tough thing to go up against a, you know, popular moderate like Beshear. But that should have been a lot. There's some things that go in there. It should have been a lot easier. I mean, McConnell had handpicked. That's why, you know, was saying that everything was going in Cameron's favor. But there's a lot of questions that remain that I think kind of go into what this portends for 2024. Just, a lot of it goes into that. We got to make smart decisions, and there's a lot of stuff in 2024 that, you know, we're going to be up against in the abortion thing. Republicans have got to have cohesive messaging on this. And I think realizing that if you believe that incrementalism and winning slowly and surely is the way to go, instead of creating for yourself more political adversaries or people to vote against life is the way to go, then maybe don't demonize those folks as being less committed to the fight for life, because they have a different way of going about it. And I do, like, again, I say that neither one are bad. It's just that both can't work in the same spot. And that's electorally reflected. And we got to be really smart about that. But I don't think that Nancy Mace helps by going out there and saying, well, we need all those. We have these things. What we have to have is some better messaging. And we also need to have, you know, candidates to not say, well, this isn't as important. Or I think stuff like what they did in Florida is stupid. It was bad. You can't have candidates that say this kind of stuff. It's just not going to work. All right, today in stupidity. Kane, what do we got?
All right, it is Karine Jean-Pierre, and then I guess by proxy, President Biden. This is what she says about what Biden has done, the efforts this old man has put in regarding to securing our border. One, go ahead and play this for us.
Look, you know, on day one, the president put forward a comprehensive immigration plan, legislation for Congress to take a serious look at and to work with him on getting that done. We have a broken immigration system. It's been broken for decades now. And the president has done everything that he can on his own to try to figure out how do we deal with...
What? The president's done everything that he can on his own about the border?
Define everything.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Anybody paying attention knows that that's a huge lie. And
well,
the spin
that's
continues.
Not accurate. Folks, make sure, again, sign up for the newsletter chapter and verse. We have all kinds of good video excerpts and everything up at YouTube and Facebook. Find us, like, and subscribe. I will be back behind the mic with you tomorrow.